Today is Tuesday, October 19th, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Junaid Awfor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, alarm bells as North Korea fires up another ballistic missile.
Concerns of an arms race on the Korean Peninsula intensified Tuesday. North Korea conducted its eighth major weapons test this year, this time of a submarine-launched ballistic missile, or SLBM.
Fighting intensifies in the Tigray region.
They told me she was severely affected by malnutrition and they could not help. Then they gave me some syrup and tablets. She passed away exactly a week later on Sunday.
Also, ruling South Africa ANC faces political headwinds. Our top story today is in the Korean Peninsula. North Korea tests fired a submarine-launched ballistic missile, or SLBM, Tuesday. The test comes just a month after South Korea conducted its own SLBM launch, as VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul.
Concerns of an arms race on the Korean Peninsula intensified Tuesday. North Korea conducted its eighth major weapons test this year, this time of a submarine-launched ballistic missile, or SLBM. SLBMs would add an unpredictable component to North Korea's arsenal. They're mobile and easier to hide. It's not the first time North Korea has tested an SLBM, but it is the first such test in 2 years. The timing is important. It comes just a month after South Korea launched its own SLBM. In 2 days, South Korea will try to launch its first homegrown space rocket. South Korea, which hosts about 28,000 U.S. troops, is building up its military so it can take on more of its own defense. North Korea, though, views the moves as provocative. Seoul-based analyst Park Won-gon says North Korea is using the South Korean launches as justification for its own nuclear development. North Korea is banned from any ballistic missile activity by a series of United Nations Security Council resolutions. Those resolutions were put in place to punish North Korea for its illicit nuclear program. In North Korea's view, those resolutions are an example of the United States and its allies employing double standards. On Monday in Washington, Sung Kim, the U.S. envoy for North Korea, reiterated the U.S. offer to resume talks aimed at making progress on denuclearization.
The U.S. continues to reach out to Pyongyang to restart dialogue. Our intent remains the same. We harbor no hostile intent towards the DPRK, and we are open to meeting with them without preconditions.
In a speech last week, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un rejected the U.S. offer, saying there's no evidence the United States has dropped what he called a hostile policy. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida on Tuesday called North Korea's continued missile launches since last month, quote, very regrettable. China's foreign ministry on Tuesday called for restraint after the ballistic missile launch. Quote, all parties concerned should focus on the overall situation, exercise restraint, commit to maintaining peace and stability on the peninsula, and carry on in the right direction of dialogue and consultation, unquote, said Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Wang Wenbin. The launch, reported by officials in South Korea and Japan, came after U.S. and South Korea envoys met in Washington to discuss the nuclear standoff with the North on Monday. The North Korean launch would be the latest weapon test by the country, which has pressed ahead with military developments in the face of international sanctions imposed over its nuclear weapons and missile programs. Washington is concerned about hypersonic missile technology and its potential military applications by China and Russia, a U.S. arms control official said on Monday, after a media report that Beijing had tested nuclear-capable hypersonic glide weapon. This report is produced by Chris Dayham of Reuters.
Thanks for asking the question, but I'm not going to comment on those specific reports.
U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin on Monday declined to comment directly on a report that China had tested a nuclear-capable hypersonic missile, saying only that Washington had an eye on Beijing's efforts to build advanced weapons.
We watch closely China's development of armament and advanced capabilities and systems that will only increase tensions in the region.
The Financial Times reported over the weekend that China tested a hypersonic missile in August, showing a capability that caught U.S. intelligence by surprise, citing five unnamed sources. On Monday, U.S. Disarmament Ambassador Robert Wood told reporters in Geneva he was concerned about what China is doing on hypersonic missiles, adding, quote, we just don't know how we can defend against that type of technology. Neither does China or Russia. Hypersonic weapons are difficult to defend against because they fly at lower altitudes than ballistic missiles, but can achieve more than 5 times the speed of sound, robbing adversaries of reaction time and traditional defeat mechanisms. Earlier on Monday, the Chinese Foreign Ministry denied the report from the Financial Times, saying it was a space vehicle, not a missile.
This test is a routine spacecraft test, and it was used to verify the reusable technology of spacecraft.
The report said the Chinese military launched a rocket carrying a hypersonic glide vehicle that flew through low-orbit space, circling the globe before speeding toward its target, which it missed by about 24 miles. But the report, citing people briefed on the intelligence, said the test showed that China had made astounding progress on hypersonic weapons and was far more advanced than U.S. officials realized. The United States and Russia are also developing hypersonic missiles, and last month, North Korea said it had test-fired a newly developed hypersonic missile, though experts said the test was likely a failure.
That's Chris Dingham of Reuters. U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken met with the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, on Monday in Washington, where the Iran nuclear talks were high on the agenda. President Joe Biden's administration wants to negotiate a return to compliance with the Iran nuclear deal. His predecessor, Donald Trump, withdrew from the agreement in 2018 and reimposed sanctions, after which Iran resumed building a stockpile of enriched uranium. Quote, "It's obviously playing a vital role in monitoring Iran's nuclear activities," unquote, Blinken told reporters in reference to the nuclear watchdog, and, quote, "It plays a critical role in helping to forge cooperation on the peaceful uses of nuclear power," unquote.
The United States strongly supports the work of the IAEA. It is critical to helping to maintain international peace and stability. It's obviously playing a vital role in monitoring Iran's nuclear activities, and it plays a critical role in helping to forge cooperation on the peaceful uses of nuclear power. So there's a lot to talk about today. Needless to say, Iran is a big part of the focus.
That's U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken. Iran wants the United States to lift sanctions to prove it wants stalled nuclear talks to proceed. AP correspondent Mike Gracia reports.
I'm Mike Gracia reporting. Iran wants the United States to lift sanctions to prove it wants stalled nuclear talks to proceed. Iran's president said Monday the United States should lift sanctions on Iran to prove it is serious about restarting stalled nuclear talks in Vienna. Ibrahim Raisi made his comments in an interview with Iranian state TV. But in Washington, at a State Department briefing, spokesman Ned Price.
We will continue to enforce them together with our allies and partners around the world until and unless Iran chooses a path of diplomacy.
Talks between Iran and the European signatories of the 2015 nuclear deal alongside Russia and China have been stalled since June. President Donald Trump unilaterally withdrew the United States from the accord in 2018. Mike Gracia, Washington.
Witnesses say Ethiopian military airstrikes have hit the capital of the country's Tigray region and killed at least 3 people, returning the war abruptly to Mekelle after several months of relative peace. The airstrikes on Monday come days after a new military offensive was launched against the Tigray forces, who have fought Ethiopian and allied forces for nearly a year. The state-owned Ethiopian press agency, citing the Air Force, reported that, quote, communication towers and equipment, unquote, were attacked. Tigray and areas of fighting in the neighboring Amhara and Afar regions are under communications blackout, challenging Air Force to verify information. Conflict in neighboring Amhara has spread to the region, forcing thousands to flee their homes, carrying with them stories of hunger and brutality. David Doyle of Reuters has more.
Saba was just 3 years old when she died of malnutrition. That was last month, as her mother tried to flee violence that has spread from Ethiopia's Tigray into neighboring Amhara. Pictures on her phone are all Habta Mekelle has left of her daughter, having pleaded with doctors to save her child.
They told me she was severely affected by malnutrition and they could not help. Then they gave me some syrup and tablets. She passed away exactly a week later on a Sunday.
Saba is just one victim of the hunger and violence that has swept through northern Ethiopia since war broke out between the federal military and forces loyal to the Tigray People's Liberation Front nearly a year ago. In July, having taken back much of Tigray, the TPLF pushed into Amhara, whose forces have been fighting alongside federal troops. The Tigrayan advance sent around 250,000 people fleeing their homes, the United Nations says. Habtam is among thousands who arrived in the town of Desi, escaping bloodshed further north. She says there was little food in areas under Tigrayan control and that Tigrayan forces took scarce medicine from local pharmacies. Getachew Reda, spokesperson for the TPLF, denied Tigrayan forces had looted local pharmacies. He said they'd set up a generator to alleviate water shortages in Habtam's area. Reuters was not able to independently verify Habtam's account, as her home is in an area off limits to journalists and phone connections are down. But people don't just have hunger to fear. At a camp in Desi, Sada says she was raped. The attack was carried out at her home by an armed man in plain clothes speaking the Tigrayan language, she says, in an area under Tigrayan control.
After, he yelled at me, "Get dressed now." I was so afraid at this point that I was going to lose my life and quickly said okay. Then he grabbed his gun and left my house as I was getting dressed.
She provided as evidence a card showing she had visited a hospital in Desi for treatment. When asked about the rape, the TPLF's Getachew said any reported incident would be investigated and that the actions of one man should not implicate the Tigrayan forces in general. Both sides in the conflict have accused the other of committing atrocities, and each side denies allegations against them. The TPLF says the Ethiopian military recently launched an offensive to dislodge the Tigrayans from Amhara. The military and government have not answered calls seeking information, but diplomats are worried the renewed fighting will further destabilize Ethiopia. And for Tigray and its surrounding areas, deepen the crisis of hunger and violence.
That's David Doyle of Reuters. Flags are flying at half-staff at some government buildings in honor of former Secretary of State Colin Powell, who died of COVID complications at the age of 84. For a Pentagon perspective, where he served as chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, I spoke with VOA's Carla Barb on his legacies and plans to honor his legacy.
For military foreign policy with the United States. I mean, Colin Powell was such a prominent figure for decades. He was the national security advisor for Ronald Reagan. He was the first African-American chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. That's the top military officer position. He was young. He was such a vibrant figure for so long. And then he came back again and became the first African-American U.S. Secretary of State under George W. Bush in the 2000s. This was a man that very much shaped U.S. foreign policy. And people in the Pentagon remember him. And it wasn't just about his foreign policy issues. People remember the man. They remember a guy that you could always turn to for advice. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin was speaking to reporters yesterday, and he said he felt like he had a hole in his heart because Colin Powell was an advisor and a friend and a mentor to him. He felt that Colin Powell could always make time to give him advice. So we really lost a truly remarkable trailblazer this week.
With such success and effectiveness of the man in whatever he did, what do you think from the Pentagon perspective his legacies will be?
People in the Pentagon referred to the Powell Doctrine. And the Powell Doctrine is basically something that he developed since his experience in Vietnam. He went to Vietnam as a young soldier. He was wounded. He saw how it turned out. He was very frustrated with Vietnam. And he came out of that saying, you know, there are times when to use military force and when not to use military force. And there are ways to use military force. If you're going to use military force, you need to use overwhelming power that doesn't give the other side a chance. That was how he formed his opinion in Vietnam. And he actually acted that out when he was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff in the 90s. Iraq invaded Kuwait. The United States decided to go and push Iraq out. And when they did, it was a very quick happening. The Gulf War was not a very long war. Saddam Hussein's military was quickly in retreat and pushed back into Iraq. And that was because of Powell's vision to use overwhelming force when going in. There is another part of his legacy, though, that he has called a blot in his legacy. He has called it a blunder, and the critics will point to this. It was a part of his experience being a leader. And when he was Secretary of State under George W. Bush, he went to the United Nations, and he said that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, and they were hiding them, and they were not complying with getting rid of them. These weapons of mass destruction, if they indeed existed, they were never found.
That's VOA's Pentagon correspondent Carla Bob speaking with me in Washington. This is the Voice of America. Russia said on Monday it would halt the activities of its diplomatic missions to NATO after the Western military alliance expelled 8 Russians in a dispute over spying. Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said that in return, staff at NATO's military mission in Moscow will be stripped of their accreditation on November 1st, and the alliance's office in the Russian capital will be shuttered. NATO said on October 6th it had expelled 8 members of Russia's mission to the alliance who it said were, quote, undeclared Russian intelligence officers, unquote. Africa's rare glaciers will disappear in the next 2 decades because of climate change, a new report warns, amid sweeping forecasts of pain for the continent. The report from the World Meteorological Organization and other agencies is a reminder that Africa's 1.3 billion people remain, quote, extremely vulnerable, unquote, as the continent warms more and at a faster rate than the global average. And yet, Africa's 54 countries are responsible for less than 4% of global greenhouse emissions. The report was released ahead of the UN Climate Conference in Scotland, which starts October 31st. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. COVID-19 cases are on the rise among English school children, risking the health of young and old alike. Mixed messaging and a slow rollout of the vaccination, compared with Europe and Scotland, who will be to blame? Lucy Fielder of Reuters has more.
The spread of COVID-19 among children in England is fueling a rise in cases, and concern among scientists that vaccines are being rolled out too slowly in schools. Mixed messaging about shots for children, a later start, and inflexibility with the rollout have combined to make vaccination for 12 to 15-year-olds lag behind other European countries, scientists say. Cases in Britain, on the whole, are higher. A survey late last week suggested prevalence was at its highest level since January, with 8% of secondary school kids infected. Lawrence Young, a virologist at the University of Warwick, warns that could risk the health of young and old alike.
And I think the other concern, of course, at the background of all of this is this the possibility of a perfect storm over the winter, because we've got flu. We know we want flu vaccines to be rolled out in youngsters as well, and for the first time, that's all the way up to the 16-year-olds as well. With other respiratory virus infections, with all of what that means, not only again for schools, but also for overwhelming the NHS. So I think if you add that into the mix, then the worry is that autumn winter is going to get very, very messy.
The goal was to offer all eligible children vaccination shots by the school half-term break, which starts next week. Data released on Thursday showed that 28.8% of children aged 12 to 17 had received a COVID-19 shot. Part of the issue is that kids get their vaccines through schools, which has led to an uneven rollout. The government is considering allowing them access to walk-in centres in the next few weeks.
That's Lucy Fielder of Reuters. A protest strike has shuttered businesses, schools and public transportation in a new blow to Haiti's anemic economy. And unions and other groups vowed to continue the shutdown Tuesday in anger over worsening crime as authorities tried to rescue 17 kidnapped members of a U.S.-based missionary group. FBI agents and other U.S. officials are helping Haitian authorities hunt for 12 adults and 5 children linked to Christian Aid Ministries in Ohio who were kidnapped Saturday during a trip to an orphanage. Jean Handy Tibbert is an investigative reporter based in Port-au-Prince and is himself a survivor of the kidnapping in the city. He tells VOA's Jackson Vungani about the operations of the kidnapping gang.
The town where the missionaries were kidnapped is called Gantier, which is a small town in between two big cities, Quadebouque and Malpas. Malpas is a border city with the Dominican Republic. So the gang leader over there is a voodoo priest. He's really young. He's a voodoo priest. He called his name L'Amour Saint-Jour, which means in English, deaths without days. That's his name.
What time were the missionaries kidnapped?
I don't have the exact time, but I think it should be in the afternoon.
How common is this type of kidnappings in Haiti targeting foreigners?
Kidnapping targeting foreigners is not common. But this particular gang, that's not the first time. They kidnap evangelical missionaries. But a few months ago, in the beginning of the year, they kidnapped 12 Catholic Christian nuns in the same area. The whole group was not released at the same time. But they released them few by few, one by one. It took almost 1 month to release them all. And then the government paid a lot of money, and the Catholic Church paid a lot of money to release them. So it's not the first time kidnapping religious people, and it's not the first time kidnapping foreigners, because in this group of Catholic priests, we had like 4 or 5 French priests and nuns.
Would you say that during this time, when after the death of President Moïse, when many said there is kind of a power vacuum, that this has gotten worse?
If you see it, if you look at it, it's not that it has gotten worse, but everything that was happening during Jovenel Moïse's presidency, the opposition and a lot of people in the population, they always said that it was Moïse's fault. It was Moïse is doing it. It was Jovenel Moïse. Jovenel Moïse is responsible for this. So it's like we thought when he died, it was tragic and everything else. But a lot of people thought when he died, okay, the guy is dead. He was responsible for everything that was going on. So what now? When Jovenel Moïse was president, we had some weeks. We had some days where you have 10, 15 kidnappings per day right now. We had some days like that, wow. But not all the time. But right now, it's like systematic. It's at least 10 people, and they broke a record last Monday. 57 people.
Kidnapped.
Kidnapped. That was one gang. That was the gang of Martisan.
The gang, the G9, are they also involved in kidnappings?
All two. The leader is always saying that no, but the gang of Martisan is part of G9, and it's everybody knows that they've been kidnapping people. It's not a secret. They have done it. Some other gang may have done it at night or, you know, hiding to do it. But Martisan, they do it broad daylight. Early morning, daylight, and videos are all over the social media. People filming them, getting trucks, getting out autobuses full of people, getting inside the area they call Grand Ravine, which is a ghetto inside Martisan, and then, you know, kidnap these people, hold them there for a few days until their family pay 10,000, 20,000, 50,000, and sometimes 100,000, depending on who you are. They always start the bid at millions. So I bet with these Americans, it's going to be something like 2, 3, or 5 million per person.
That's John Handy Tibbet, an investigative reporter based in Port-au-Prince, speaking with my colleague, Jackson Vungani. Human rights activists urged governments and athletes worldwide to boycott the 2020 Winter Olympics in China, saying that anything less would make the world complicit in what they called, quote, genocide by Beijing. China's treatment of minorities has come under increased scrutiny in the run-up to the Games, which kicks off February 4th. Activists protested at Olympia on Monday, where the torch lighting ceremony was held. Chinese authorities have been accused of facilitating forced labor by detaining around 1 million Uyghurs and members of other primarily Muslim minorities in camps since 2016. China denies wrongdoing, saying it has set up vocational training centers to combat extremism. Right groups and U.S. lawmakers have called on the International Olympic Committee to postpone the Games and relocate the event unless China ends what the United States deems ongoing genocide against Uyghurs and other Muslims. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mark Villavaro, and our managing editor, Kate Powell Dawson, I am Chinedofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a pleasant evening.
Your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. and it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 2-